Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by my good friend and yours, Mr. Peter Marsh.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing. The power's with me today. I'm doing very well.
Yes, I see your six-pack. You're looking very hot right now.
Absolutely. today, me and Pete are here to talk about Masters of the Universe Revelation, which came out in 2021. It's a Netflix show. It's 10 episodes long, and it was released in two different parts that are called Part 1 and Part 2. The first five were released on January 23rd, 2021, and then the second five, November 23rd. After the first one was released, a lot of people on the internet had a lot of feelings, which we'll get into.
Yeah.
But before we get into this specific series, I want to talk just a little bit about Master Universe.
Sure.
This is the 40th anniversary of when the Master of the Universe toys came out. So, like, the short version is, just like with the history of movies, Star Wars completely changed the history of toys, and Star Wars toys, specifically small action figures, were so freaking huge that everyone else was like, how do we get in on this? And Mattel was really the only ones that were like, you know what? Instead of trying to find a movie or a show that's already existing, let's just make our own thing, our own mythology, and make our own toys for it and make comics for it. And then eventually they decided to do a show with Filmation. And He-Man and the Masters of the Universe was kind of created by two people. An executive at Mattel named Roger Sweet and a designer named Mark Taylor. Now, people argue over who did it. It's a little bit of a Bob Kane, Bill Finger thing.
Right.
Because Roger Sweet had the idea of, like, he's strong and his name is He-Man. But he had nothing else. He didn't have Barbarian. He didn't have any of this. Like, Mark Taylor came up with what He-Man looked like and every other character, Castle Grayskull, Eternia. So I think of Mark Taylor, who actually just passed away this last Christmas Eve. I think of Mark Taylor as the creative He-Man in my mind.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you on that. You know, I shared with you a Twitter thread from this guy. His name's Comrade Bolsky, and he often does these, like, sort of retrospectives on different properties, usually comic book stuff. And he talked a lot about Mark Taylor and his influence on He-Man. And I do think it is pretty accurate thing to compare it to Bill Finger. Like, he was really inspired by Robert E. Howard, who's the guy that created Conan.
Yeah.
And if you look at the original concept art for the He-Man toy, it looks a lot like Conan, too.
Yeah. And a lot of Frazetta. Frazetta.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he made all the women, like, very sexy. For action figures, if you look at, like, the original Teela and the original Sorceress, and even Evelyn, like, they have super tiny waists and, like, super huge boobs.
Yeah, I think, isn't there that Toys That Made Us episode where they talk about He-Man? And I think they kind of make him look a little pervy, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He's definitely a little pervy.
Yeah. No, I think it's interesting because when they wanted to make this toy line to begin with, they wanted to be this hero that had interchangeable outfits. And I know that's kind of like the original G.I. Joe. The G.I. Joe that was a doll, where he would be this action figure that you could change his costume to represent different time periods, right? And I think it's so interesting that this stuff kind of is inspired by dolls, even though it becomes these very masculine boy toys. And they all come out around the same time, you know?
Well, you got to think, Mattel, their biggest thing ever was Barbie, which is based on the model of changing clothes and outfits and stuff.
Yeah.
I just think it's so interesting how far we've gone, because the original He-Man and Masters of the Universe, as much as I love it, you know, it was a commercial. It was about selling toys, and it was super capitalistic, and it was super stuck in these gender normative ideas of He-Man and She-Ra, and they look like this. Whereas now, 40 years later, you have, you know, the Netflix show She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, where they're like queer characters. There are queer characters in this show. There are people of color. Like, you know, I guess I'm tipping my hat a little bit early, but when guys our age say, oh, they ruined my childhood, or oh, they ruined something, I always think, no, it was something cool and colorful and interesting when we were kids. But remaking it the way they do it is actually how it becomes lore. You should be super excited that they took, you know, what was essentially very colorful looking characters, and that was it, and created these great narratives, similar to the conversation you and I had about the Power Ranger comics. You know, like, Power Ranger narratives are so much more interesting now than they ever were. The He-Man shows that are on the air, we're talking about Revelation this week, but next week we're going to talk about the other He-Man show that came out the same year, which is more aimed, it's a reboot that's aimed for a younger audience. To end the She-Ra Princesses of Power, which I've talked about before in my podcast, I think they're all the best Masters of the Universe things that have ever been. And I love the stuff. I love the movie, but I can, I know it's flawed. I love, the, you know, I love the old show, but honestly, if I watch it now, other than nostalgia, it's super slow paced. Nothing ever happens. It's super formulaic.
Yeah.
So I love, you know, and you hear this with Power Rangers, Ghostbusters, Ninja Turtles. And to me, it's just like, I think it's always getting better.
In
my mind.
That is a really good observation. I think I would agree with you on that too. I mean, the cartoons are certainly better than the 80s cartoons. And I am a huge Transformers fan too, right? Like, I love Transformers. I like Transformers better than Masters of the Universe. And I feel like Transformers cartoons have evolved too over time. I would say one thing though. I think that maybe the comics sometimes are the best form of any of these. You know, there's like an incredible Ninja Turtles comic that IDW puts out. With He-Man, there's been multiple comics put out by DC, including Masters of the Multiverse, which
I've read that.
Okay, yeah, right, right. And then also there was like He-Man versus Injustice, and you know, there's just different versions of the character that exist beyond the cartoons. And so I think Revelations is really great. I actually really like the CGI cartoon.
Me too.
Though they are like superior to the original cartoon, and all these guys that get so bent out of shape saying they ruined our childhood, it's just really truly nostalgia, you know?
I think we're really kind of agreeing. Like, I haven't read enough of the comics to agree with you that it's the best stuff, but it's the same point, which is you took these archetypes that already existed and said, okay, now with an adult mindset and mature narratives and really good storytelling, how do we take them and make them really good stories? And that's what will keep it enduring. You know, like, they have to keep making stuff or it will just die in nostalgia. No one will ever care about it anymore.
Yeah. And a little like interesting, like, side little tangent. You and I always have these conversations. We have these conversations about like Star Wars on like my YouTube channels and stuff. And it's always talking about this group of people on the internet that get so bent out of shape about this stuff, about the idea of like diversity in their beloved franchises. And I watched this one video recently where the guy was talking about how it's almost like there's some of them are con artists and they're just sort of getting views based on the outrage that they don't even feel that way. You know,
I agree.
It's cool to like have a conversation with you, because I feel like we are politically and just the way that we think, we're very similar, and we can view this stuff and appreciate it and not get bent out of shape because they changed a character's gender or they made a character black skin versus white, you know?
Yeah.
I would say African-American, but we're on like another fucking planet, so they're not African-American. No one's American. Right.
You know? There's no Africa on Eternia.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the controversy that came up with this show, actually, let's say first that this show wildly is produced and written, and the showrunner is Kevin Smith from Jay and Silent Bob, Clerks, Mallrats fame. And as a young guy, like a young kid, like getting into movies like 13, 14, I idolized him. And then as I got older and saw better movies, I kind of was like, he's kind of lame. He's never really like lived up to his potential. And then he started like directing Supergirl and The Flash. And I was like, okay, He's still doing stuff, but this might be my favorite thing he's ever done, honestly.
Yeah.
And I think that's a hard task to go from like writing comedy movies about adults, stoners, to like writing pretty good narratives about He-Man. I tip my hat to him. Like, he's done a great job.
I agree. He has also written comic books as well. And he's written like a Batman comic. He's written a Daredevil comic. I think that maybe his Daredevil comic might be his favorite thing that he's written.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen his movies, but boy, does he like swing for the fences when he makes movies. He doesn't care who's watching them. He just wants to make his own thing.
Yeah.
I prefer Masters of the Universe Revelation to a lot of his stuff, especially his more modern stuff.
Yeah.
But it, to me, it's like he's much more of just like a personality. Like, he kind of created this form that we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Of like the podcast talking about pop culture stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because his career almost doesn't make sense. It's incongruous because he's at one point a personality, but also like as a director, he's become a hired hand, like a journeyman director. Like he's not, he doesn't have an auteurship that much, really. You know, he directs whatever you ask him to do, he'll direct it.
Yeah, yeah. And he actually had a DC project that was coming out soon, but that got canceled in this big Warner Brothers canceling apocalypse that they've had.
That's the most insane, you know. How dare they do that to Michael Keaton? How dare they?
I know. And because of Ezra Miller, I feel like that Flash movie is going to get scrapped too soon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. The reason why I keep kind of bringing back Warner Brothers stuff is because Warner Brothers owns Masters of the Universe. And so I always kind of treat it the same way as the DC stuff. And maybe further in our discussion, we'll even talk about some similarities between like certain DC characters and Masters of the Universe characters too. But like, it's all kind of under the same blanket of DC. And I think that even like He-Man is very similar to Shazam too.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think one way that He-Man is similar to DC, and we did an episode of PCMC recently called The Pros and Cons of Canon. And my thesis, my hypothesis was that because Marvel put so much effort into creating this unbreakable, strong canon, that other people have purposefully gone against it. I mean, two He-Man shows produced by the same producers coming out both on Netflix in the same year are completely different continuities. That's not a mistake. That's entirely on purpose.
Right.
It's like they're saying, who cares about continuity? And I kind of find that so refreshing now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I definitely wouldn't want Revelation to cross over with the CGI cartoon. I would like at least one of them to maybe cross over with She-Ra. And I know that they were talking about having this Revelation cartoon cross over for like a Christmas special. Because I really like that She-Ra cartoon on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. That was incredible. I love the show. I actually might like that the best of these three shows we're talking about. It's really incredible. Now, the weird thing is, I believe they're owned by different rights. Because I remember during the She-Ra show, people kept asking her about He-Man, and she was like, I would love to do it, but they won't let me. Mm. But at the end of, spoiler, at the end of this series, Revelation, there's a big hint at Hordak,
right,
She-Ra's main villain. So there might be some way to do this. The new season is being called Masters of the Universe Revolution.
Right. Hordak in the She-Ra cartoon was really interesting, too.
Yeah, because then they introduced Hordak Prime, who was like almost like a nihilistic kind of villain.
Yeah, yeah. Very similar to like the Borg Queen from Star Trek, sort of like assimilating everyone. And Hordak assimilates people in this show that we're about to talk about, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. So let's get into it. The first episode is called The Power of Grayskull. Something that's really cool about this series is, like those Power Ranger comics we've been talking about, it's all the same character designs and the same narrative of the old show. It's meant to be like, literally, when the old show ends, this show would begin, like a few days later or something. And even the first episode kind of begins like a He-Man episode would begin, but then there's a huge turn, which you would never have seen in the old show, which is Adam is killed,
right.
Which is wild. And, you know, me just watching as a fan, I was like, holy shit, like stakes.
Yeah.
In one fight, Adam is killed and Skeletor is killed. And then it's a And then it immediately goes to like a World Without He-Man story. Uh-huh. I was like thrilled by this, but the internet was like, this is woke bullshit. He just wanted to make a show about Teela. Why not just call it Teela? This is a He-Man-less He-Man show. And, and a lot of people are like, he lied to us. He lied. And my thing was like, that's like saying Alfred Hitchcock lied to you by saying Janet Leigh is the star of Psycho. Like, to me, it's not a lie to preserve an obvious narrative surprise. Like, what if Wes Craven were like, oh, by the way, even though Drew Barrymore's on the poster, she's actually not the star of Scream. She dies in the first scene.
Like the
weird like fanboys that were like, he lied to me. But it's a good story. Like the idea of like, you know, these two guys are fighting forever, right? They're mm-hmm. adults.
Yeah.
And like they fight, like I guess the first oh shit moment is when Skeletor kills Mossman.
Yeah. Yeah. That was brutal.
Yeah, and you're like, holy shit, like someone actually died. Like Skeletor actually killed somebody.
Yeah.
And even He-Man like goes into a rage. Like you see He-Man like, oh, holy shit, like he just took this to another level.
Yeah, yeah. Brian and I covered this on Comic Books Transformed. We covered both part one and part two. And in there, we talked about how this is very similar to The Transformers, the movie in 1986.
Uh-huh.
The way that works is that all the Transformer toys that were like not going to be sold anymore, they just slaughtered those characters. And it's very similar to He-Man where like, in the cartoon, the bad guys fight the good guys, no one dies, and you just restart every episode, right? Well, in Transformers, the movie, they just start, like, shooting each other, and, like, characters melt from the inside.
Yeah, Optimus Prime
dies, right? And that's what this first episode really reminded me of the Transformers, the movie. It is a big shocker, and that first episode is so epic, too. Like, it looked like the character art on the back of a toy box where you just have like, you know, the Grayskull Kingdom and all the toys flying at each other. I mean, they threw in everybody from the toy box in that episode.
Yeah. This series is the first time, like they call it a war, but like, this is the first time you actually like see war. There's like, there's like huge battles in it. Like the last couple of episodes is just like, It's like a siege story. It's amazing and incredible. Well, I gotta say the opening, the like introduction to the episode is amazing because they kind of narrate the story so far, but they use the actual images from the toy box.
Right.
And it's just like I was just like thrilled because again, that's an idea of like this is lore.
Right.
Yeah, and they called him the Demon Skeletor. I was just like, I'm completely on board already.
Yeah, when we were kids, the Masters of the Universe toys came with comic books, you know?
Yeah.
And that was one thing that got me into comics in the first place, and it got me into that He-Man lore, but it never really got super exciting until we got to that Dolph Lundgren movie. And that Dolph Lundgren movie was super exciting because it was very violent. And this show is just like that, where it like takes everything up a notch. There are stakes, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
And I think the main problem is with like Netflix putting out episodes all in one shot, people couldn't really like let that sink in and appreciate it. Once Skeletor and He-Man die in that first episode, you know, everyone just lost their shit. Whereas if we had just seen that first episode and then a week had passed, I think people would have really gotten on board. You know what I'm saying?
I think so. Well, Netflix is the only streamer that's still doing the binge model. Everyone else is doing week by week. They've kind of gone backwards to that.
Which is wise. I think
I agree.
You know, you just put out a thing like this and then everyone gets mad because it's all about Teela in that first season. And then people forget about it in a couple of weeks. Whereas if it had been this drawn out thing, I think people would have appreciated it.
Yeah. So it is all about Teela. Teela in this show is voiced by Sarah Michelle Gellar, Buffy herself.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the series, Teela's father, Duncan, the man-at-arms, is sort of retiring, and they're making Teela the new man-at-arms. And this show actually, the really clever thing the show does is there's a conceit in the original series, which was always kind of weird, and this show exploits that, which is everyone in Adam's life knows that he is his alter ego is He-Man, that He-Man is Adam. The only person who doesn't know is his best friend Teela.
Yeah.
And I always thought that, even before this, I always thought that was weird. And it's, I think it was so clever for Kevin Smith and his writers to be like, that's what the revelation is in the name Revelation. Right. That and the other one, which was that her mother is the sorceress.
Right.
One thing that we can talk about with this and the next episode is, very interestingly, there are things that happen in both series, like Teela becoming a sorceress. And you know, just I think it says a lot about our culture and how we think about things now. But yeah, there are things. And I should say that this particular show has a lot of nods to the movie. A lot.
Yeah. I think Blade shows up in that first battle.
I flipped the table over. Blade, that was his animation debut. Blade was a character made entirely for the movie. And he appears in this. So does Pig Boy.
Right. Do you know the story behind Pig Boy, by the way, or no? I think it's in that Toys That Made Us episode, right?
Either that or that documentary. You could tell us about Pig Boy.
No. Just basically when they were making this Masters of the Universe live-action movie with Dolph Lundgren running around in the loincloth, they had a contest where a kid could win to be a character in the movie. And so this one little boy won. And then he's this little character that's in the, like, the Grayskull Castle, and his name is Pig Boy. And Kevin Smith voices him in this cartoon.
Yeah. And he literally does nothing in the movie. He hands Skeletor his staff. Like, because apparently the director, who we do not speak of, the director of the movie didn't know about the whole contest thing. They just kind of threw it on him.
Yes. That's the greatest moment of that kid's fucking life.
I know. there's a lot of big changes in the very first episode. We learn that underneath Grayskull is this whole like area where the power is sort of concentrated, and it's this almost like garden area. Mm-hmm. And also we learn that the Castle Grayskull facade of the scary skull is actually not what the castle looks like. It really looks like this very beautiful, ornate castle, which I forget what they call that. They call that like...
The Hall of Wisdom.
The Hall of Wisdom. And it was camouflaged to sort of keep people away from the power. They get way into the lore and all this. And they have that battle down in that garden. And Skeletor kills Mossman. Mossman is voiced, by the way, by Alan Oppenheimer, who was not just the original Skeletor, but Optimus Prime. Right. And just he was the original Cringer. He was a lot. They really put him in this to be like as an homage, because he was a lot of voices. I think he might have also been Man at Arms. He played a lot of voices in the original cartoon.
Yeah. Yeah. He wasn't Optimus Prime because that's Peter Cullen who's Optimus Prime.
Oh, okay. Okay. You're right. You're right. He's definitely Skeletor, Beast. He might have been Beast Man. I'm not sure. But he plays. Yeah. Mossman. Mossman's killed. Adam and Skeletor fight. Skeletor runs Adam through with a sword, which goes into like a keyhole, which is, again, it's a reference to the toy. The toy for Castle Grayskull, you would open the drawbridge by putting He-Man and Skeletor's swords together, which is also something they homage in this, because the swords are ripped, the sword of power is ripped apart into two different halves, which is going back to the toy. They do a lot of amazing homages to the toys and nods to the toys.
Yeah. One of the best things about when you have like almost like a generation between when a cartoon and toys come out and then they make a new story is that you have guys like us, guys that are in their like late 30s, early 40s, maybe older, and they try to make sense out of this wacky shit that we had when we were kids. You know, you have the most randomly named characters, Trapjaw, Stinkor, all this kind of weird shit when we're kids, and it's just to make toys that little boys will buy. Guys like us that are like, oh, well, this is the reason why they have this sword. This is the reason why this castle is here, you know? And that was such a great revelation for me, was the idea that like all of the magic that's in Eternia is like essentially siphoned through Castle Grayskull. And I really liked the idea that like He-Man was like a conduit for the power itself. That's why he says, I have the power.
Right.
And you think that the sword is the like the thing that gives him the power, but it's like He-Man himself has the power. The sword just kind of helps him focus it. And I mean, that's more in part two of the series. But in this beginning, this intro, the Sword of Power gets split into two parts, and one part goes to Subternia, which is essentially like hell.
Yeah.
And then the other part goes to Preternia, which is like heaven.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just the people behind the scenes just like making sense of all this madness from these toys, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know, I love that. I mean, Preternia, which is like heaven, it looks exactly like the Eternia playset.
Mm-hmm.
Even with like the little the little wire where the little car would go.
Right.
It's that iconography is so great.
Yeah. For those of you guys, just a little side thing, Mike sent me a video where they started talking about season two of this show, and it had like Steven Root, who's Cringer, was on there, and Dolph Lundgren was on there. And then there was a guy that was just making all the He-Man toys, and he was talking about the He-Man toy update from Mattel. And they have like a playset that looks just like that now, and it's like huge.
Yeah.
But didn't you kind of feel like the response to that wasn't that great? Like the audience was like, yeah. Like they didn't seem impressed.
Yeah, I'll admit, this was an illegal rip from San Diego Comic Con panel. Yeah. Don't come after me. No, you know what? It's so funny you say that, because what I was disappointed in, they were like, they showed the trailer for season three of the other shows, the CGI, He-Man and the Master Universe, and I felt like the audience should have been more into that, and they weren't.
Right. Yeah, the audience was just so underwhelmed for some reason, and I don't know if that was like backlash because of this show. I don't know what was going on, but know. They just weren't feeling it.
I'm excited. Season three starts the 18th of this month. We're almost at season three.
Yeah.
We'll get to it next week, but I found I was shocked by the end of season two of that show. I was shocked.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get to it.
So yeah. Oh, I should say, when Skeletor and He-Man fight, Skeletor says, "Let this be our final battle," which is a line from the movie.
Right. Frank Langella. Yeah.
Yeah. So the next episode is called The Poison Chalice. And this is like, I guess it's like a couple months later, maybe 6 months later. It's not just a world without He-Man and a world without Skeletor. It's a world without magic. The magic that was like, Eternia it's almost like a Genesis story. Eternia is the planet at the very center of all of life. And it's the first planet, and it's made out of pure magic. And because Skeletor broke this orb and basically like all the magic was depleted, now there's magic leaving the world. So like Evelyn, who is a witch, and Orko, who is a mage, they both are like physically kind of dying and like can barely move. And it's like they're dying for magic. Like there's a scene where like people are like, there's magic water and they're like going up, and like it's like that scene at the end of Mad Max Fury Road with the water. They're like, oh, magic water.
Yeah,
don't
waste
any of the magic. And
right.
We find out that Teela, now with a very cool haircut, she's got like the side shaved, and then Teela and her girlfriend / best friend is Andra. Andra appeared in the comics somewhere as a very small character. She was not on the show, but she's not a new character. They very smartly took someone from somewhere in the canon and said, we're gonna pick this character.
Yeah.
So Andra and Teela are kind of working like, I guess, mercenaries. They're hired hands. And then Evelyn, not doing a great job, just pretending to be some old lady.
Yes, yes.
I have a job for you. Go and go to Snake Mountain and steal. What does she need them to steal? Oh, steal the chalice.
Right.
The chalice. Right. And then they go. So they go to Snake Mountain, and you have Henry Rollins as
Triclops,
right. And they've created like a cult worshiping motherboard, so it's like a science cult.
Yes.
It's really interesting, especially when we talk about the next show, where, because I feel like the next show depicts magic as science, like the sword like opens up and like we'll get into it, but so basically all of Skeletor's like minions have like gone off in weird ways.
Yeah, like, do you want to talk about the cast? Because you mentioned Henry Rollins, right?
Yeah.
I think we should talk about the cast. Like, one thing that's very interesting, we keep talking about the other Netflix show, right? That one has like veteran voice actors for cartoons, but this show is just like jam packed with like, you know, famous actors and stuff. You know, Chris Wood, he's like the least famous one, but he's He-Man, right? And then you have Skeletor is Mark Hamill,
right?
The Joker himself, Luke Skywalker himself. You said Henry Rollins was Triclops. Man-at-Arms is Liam Cunningham. That's the guy that's like Davos Seaworth from, Game of Thrones, right? Tila, you said Sarah Michelle Gellar. I mean, there's a ton of famous people in it. And
What's her name? Who's Evelyn? The one from
Evelyn is Lena Headey, who was Cersei. Yeah, yeah. And I think that like the pedigree of the actors really raises the bar for this show. It really makes it seem like this prestige animated event, you know? And they do a fantastic job, even though like voice acting is not their first thing.
Right, right, right.
But going back to like what you were saying, like this sort of like this post Magic Eternia, it's a lot of fun. It's kind of depressing in a lot of ways too, because like Orko, for instance, you're saying that like, you know, he's dying. He is, but like his whole race of people, the Trollins or Trollax or whatever the fuck they're called, they all just got wiped out, you know?
Yeah.
Because magic is gone. It's a really interesting concept, and I would have kind of liked it if they had actually just focused on this world a lot longer and just showed the world minus magic, you know? Like
honestly, if they had never brought He-Man back, I would have been totally fine, but that was never going to happen.
Right, right. And I think that like maybe if you had named it something else, like if you had called it like Tila and then made it this like spin-off of He-Man, I think you wouldn't have got that big fan backlash that they got. But you mentioned before the idea of like science and magic being like opposed, or like in the one show they might be working together. That's always been the really interesting thing about He-Man to me, is that you have like almost like, you know, Conan the Barbarian, Lord of the Rings type magic, and then you have like people on like flying speeder bikes and laser guns and stuff. And it's interesting that they all exist in the same world.
Right.
And with the stuff that you're talking about in Snake Mountain, that's like the idea of like, well, now that magic's gone, technology's starting to take over.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. No, I think that maybe the greatest thing that Masters of the Universe did as a brand was combine like medieval sorcery with sci-fi. Like there are castles and kings and queens and princes and, you know, royal jesters. And like lasers and shit, like that I think is the stroke. But yeah, you're right. Like the villains who it almost makes it like Skeletor is a cult leader, because without him, they just like find something else to worship.
Right, right.
They worship Motherboard, which is what they call like it's a little bit like the Borg. Like they make you drink from the poison chalice, and you kind of like become a cyborg.
Right, right.
Tila brings the poison chalice back to Evelyn, and we find out that it's actually the ram's head at the top of the Havoc staff, Skeletor's staff, and she needs it because they're trying to like refine, they need to find the swords because they want to regain the magic. And it's really interesting because at first Tila's like, this is a trick. But then Cringer is like, no, we're actually all working together. It doesn't, at this point, it doesn't matter what side you're on because everything's dying. And to me, that's so good. The idea of like that the little like fellowship that's in this story is, you know, Tila, Andra, Evelyn, Beastman, and Orko all together.
Yep.
You know, like, making them into real characters, basically.
Yes. Yeah. That is the height of the show. The height of the show is when it's those characters working together and you see more depth with Evelyn and Beastman. I mean, Beastman of all characters. You're like, oh my God, I want to see more of Beastman and Evelyn together. And it just goes along with that cast that I was telling you about. They get to like make these characters seem like adult people versus these sort of goofy caricatures.
Right.
You know, grew up with. So that's the best part of the show. And then they go on these quests for a few episodes, and then we do get the return of the characters that everyone has been expecting.
So moving along through the story, they have to find the two sides of the swords. So they end up going to Sub-Eternia and Pre-Eternia, Heaven and Hell. In Sub-Eternia, they meet Scareglow, who is voiced by Tony Todd from Candyman. And it's interesting because Scareglow as a character, like, the toy never made sense. The toy was called, like, the evil spirit of Skeletor. Like, it never made sense. So in this, he's basically like Hades, or he's like the devil. And he makes these nightmares for all of them. Like in Tila's, it's that no one she loves trusts her, or everyone lies to her. With Orko, it's like It's like about his family. He's alone because all of his people died. We learned something interesting. We learned that Orko's real name is Oracle, but as a kid, he couldn't say it right, so he became Oracle. I thought that was a really smart touch.
Yeah.
And I actually start to – I really like the bond between Evil-Lyn and Orko as like two magic users who are like both on the same quest.
Yeah. This show, basically in general, it really substitutes Evil-Lyn for Skeletor and then Teela for He-Man, right? And it makes them kind of like the opposites of each other. And it really, really treats their character arcs with maturity. And Evil-Lyn maybe is the most interesting character in the whole series. So you got this little dynamic with her and Beastman, where he's like her lackey and he's giving her advice, and he kind of sees into her who she really is. And then there's this interaction with her and Orko, and it just kind of transcends the stuff that, you know, we grew up as a kid. It's like kind of deep stuff.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. We also, something that I found really fascinating, which I didn't think they were going to do, was in part two, they make it explicitly clear that Skeletor and Evil-Lyn fuck and have a sexual relationship. She even says, like, you have to, because what happens at the end of part one is Adam raises the sword. They get both parts of the sword. Adam raises it and says, by the power of Grayskull. And then before finishing it, Skeletor kills him again.
Yes.
And then it's kind of a fake out, because in part two, he's sick, but Teela heals him. She uses magic for the first time.
Right.
And so Skeletor becomes Skele-God. He calls down the power, and Evil-Lyn realizes, like, she's basically, it's actually, I think, a very mature story about an abusive relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
He abuses her emotionally and physically, and like you said, like, Beastman is very deep in this. Like, Beastman's kind of like, hey, like, fuck this guy. Like, you should really, like, you should be our leader.
Yes.
And to get him, she knows she has to steal the sword, so she seduces him, and she's like, well, you have to power down because you're a god, and if, you know, you fuck me as a god, she doesn't say fuck, but if you fuck me as a god, you'll kill me. So he powers down, and then she steals the sword.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that was probably one of the most awkward things to watch, was Evil-Lyn getting on top of Skeletor.
Yeah.
Like, kind of grinding on top of Skeletor. I was like, oh man, they're going to do this. And, you know, it was awkward when I was talking about it on my show. I think
awkward, probably, you mean hot?
Yeah. I mean, just like, you know, Mark Hamill is just doing that old Skeletor voice, that really high-pitched kind of nasally Skeletor voice. And it just feels weird. I mean, Skeletor is just weird to begin with, right? Because he's got this skull face, but he's got this, like, buff body. And, you know, she just climbs on board him. And it's just like, I don't want to see, you know. If I want to watch a porn parody, I'll go on X Videos or something. I don't want to watch it on Netflix. Yeah. Right? But that was like fake out number three, essentially, at this point. Yeah. Because they kill off Skeletor and He-Man in the first episode. Then they come back in the other episode, and then he gets stabbed. And then in this, Evil-Lyn becomes like the main bad guy.
Right.
And I'm sure the fanboys were just like, oh, what the hell? Right. You know, just this like buff Evil-Lyn too, which, like, I know that for guys growing up, it just kind of throws them off, because you have these like warrior women that are part of this war, and they just can't like accept the idea that they're not going to be these like sexy characters that match the toys that we grew up with.
Right. Well, something I really like about this show is, you know, the character design. And when Skeletor calls down the power, he becomes Skele-God, and he has like rams. He looks very cool. He has like ram horns, and he's bigger. And when Evil-Lyn calls it down, she has this really cool look. She actually has something that they do in the other series too, where her cape, if you look at her cape, it looks like a star map. And it, even when she moves, it stays the same. So it almost looks like it's a like a window to another world. And that's what they do with the sorceress in the other show. And she looks very cool. She has short hair all of a sudden, and she's like real badass.
Yeah,
she's a very it's very interesting too, because Skeletor is just like, he just wants to kill He-Man. And there's this great scene where Evil-Lyn's like, is that it? All this power was just to kill this one dude? Like, is that all? You're pathetic. Like, that's all. He's the only thing that means anything in your life. But her thing is like, he shows her the universe, and she like has this nihilist moment where she's like, oh, wait, we're completely and utterly alone. Like, the universe is nothing. We are all, and she wants to end existence because she's just depressed and says life is meaningless, so we might as well all die. It's very deep in a way.
Oh yeah, that sequence where Skeletor shows her the universe is that's like, once again, like transcending the story. It's like becoming something greater. And based on the fact that it's, you know, based on toys and a kid's cartoon, it's like a whole nother level, you know? Have you ever talked about like Avatar, The Last Airbender?
Yeah.
And then if you talk about like Legend of Korra?
Yeah.
Like, you know that whole sequence where they show where the avatars come from? They have that like that origin story?
Yeah, that's the best episode of Korra.
Right. Yeah. That's what this kind of reminded me of like, no, we're not trying to tell a story within the confines of a kid's cartoon. We're actually trying to tap into something deeper, like things that like adults think about or teenagers think about.
Yeah.
And that I really, really appreciated that sequence with her, you know. Yeah. And that episode, I believe that episode's called Street Rat, and it shows her origins.
Right, which is like he found her in the gutter and helped her. And we actually, when you see Skeletor in the flashback, he has Hordak's symbol on his belt, which is a nod to the original canon. In the canon, Hordak was like, Skeletor worked for Hordak, and then Skeletor stole She-Ra. There's some, I forget how it's very Star Warsy. I forget exactly how it goes. Well, let me ask you, how do you feel about Skeletor in part two? Skeletor is now, he has He-Man's power, but He-Man has this great thing where he's like, well, the sword's just a conduit, I'm the spark, and he calls down the power, but he basically becomes a giant non-verbal beast. And I think it's a nod to the original comics that came with the toys. He picks up an axe from the wall because that was his other weapon that the toy came with, this battle axe.
And
it's it's really fascinating. Like, he just becomes this huge like beast that just beats the shit out of Skeletor.
Yeah, he's like the Incredible Hulk, you know, just going nuts. And I just love the fact that it's like that reference to that proto He-Man from like the original He-Man comics, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
It just, you know, you could tell that Kevin Smith just really wanted to use the lore, and he really wanted to give these shout outs to these fans like you and I that would just appreciate it. And I personally like the idea of like the power being so much that he's just this fucking uncontrollable monster, you know, and that the sword itself is what kind of focuses him. I like that. And he's scary. And, you know, if we're talking about like great moments in the series, another really great part is when he is that savage He-Man character and they go to the camp where all you know, King Randor and all of his subjects have sort of escaped. And He-Man, Savage He-Man, runs up to King Randor, and King Randor just lets himself kind of get close to He-Man. And he says, you know, I'm sorry. He basically is asking He-Man to forgive him. And that's what makes He-Man calm down and turn back into Adam. And I just thought that once again was like this great scene. You know, it's just better than what you would expect from this kind of show.
Right.
You know, you said earlier before that like Kevin Smith, this might be your favorite thing that he wrote. I was like, man, this is fucking good. If you take all that evil in stuff, you take this scene, I think King Randor was voiced by like Diedrich Bader, like that comedian. He's like Batman on the Harley Quinn show.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. But that's just such a freaking touching scene, you know. And also, like, we didn't even touch upon this, but like He-Man's parents like essentially got divorced on the show at one point, and they separated because of the whole revelation.
It's canon from the old show. She actually always knew that Adam was He-Man and the father didn't. And I don't know if you remember, in the original canon, He-Man's half human. She-Ra's mother is from Earth. She was an astronaut. She's voiced in this by Alicia Silverstone. And she actually says, as if, as a Clueless reference.
Yeah. That's the whole thing, right? When it comes to this stuff, it's very easy to just, let's just tap into nostalgia. Oh, remember Clueless? Oh, remember He-Man? Remember all this stuff? But if you do it well and you tell a good story, then it works. And I think that like Kevin Smith has the potential to, you know, put in too many Easter eggs and stuff like that. But this show, I think with the story they were trying to tell, it does work.
Well, the worst part of the show is the Fistor joke where he's like, I want to fist you. Like, it was who is this for? Like, really? Yeah. Like, it was just like, come on, it's so easy. It's such a meme. Like, it reminded me of in the third X-Men movie when the Juggernaut is like, "I'm the Juggernaut, bitch." Like, way to go for the low-hanging fruit.
Right, right. Low-hanging fruit's the best way you could put that. I guarantee Kevin Smith threw that in. And I think that Fisto. I think that was like his friend that does one of the podcasts with him, Hollywood Babylon. Yeah. So yeah, that was pretty cheesy. And but that sucked too, right? Because like Skeletor's so powerful,
yeah,
that like he doesn't even let their souls go to heaven when Fisto and Champ get killed. Fuck, that's fucked up.
Yeah, and Evelyn like destroys heaven and hell.
And by the end of the show, by the resolution, I don't think that heaven is fixed.
Yeah.
I don't think Preternia still exists.
What do you think of, we didn't talk about this, but when they go to Preternia, we meet all, like, they call him the champion, He-Man, in this. We meet all the other champions going back to King Grayskull, who's, oh my God, he's black!
Oh my God!
My childhood! And I think that was really cool. And like, they're like, you can go back to the living world, but this is your, like, it's almost like Valhalla or like Nordic. Yep. It's like, this is your reward and you can't come back. And He-Man, so basically He-Man sacrifices heaven, a little like Buffy, to go into, to live again and help them.
Yeah.
I also love when Skeletor and He-Man are working together against Evelyn.
Yes.
I thought that was brilliant. And I love that they didn't make Adam scared of Skeletor. Like, he's Adam, but he still is disrespectful to Skeletor. I thought that was very cool. And I loved when Skeletor was like, He-Man, like, making fun of his stupid name.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this show is, like, super epic, and it hits all those points. And, you know, you mentioned all those other heroes and the idea of it being like Valhalla in Preternia. Yeah. I think it goes back to what I was saying before of like that comparison to Shazam, you know, from DC Comics, right? Because Shazam, his power comes from like all the different Greek gods. And so, you know, he has like the strength of Hercules and the wisdom of, I don't know, Athena or something like that. And what I got from the Preternia stuff is that it's like this role that he takes on to become this champion, you know? Mm. And it's just because the interesting thing too is that Adam is like this teenage kid. You see it kind of more in the CGI cartoon. Yeah. And it's this sort of like wish fulfillment thing that we grew up with as children. Like, oh, I could be this kind of scared kid.
Yeah.
And then I could tap into this power and become this amazingly powerful man.
Right.
And when we watched that panel that Kevin Smith hosted, they hit upon that a lot. They hit upon that idea of like, you could feel alienated, you could feel by yourself, but like He-Man shows that you might have the power to become literally the master of the universe.
Yeah. I tell you, in the last episode, a moment that really, like, as a fan, like, made me like stand up and cheer was when Adam and Skeletor came to like confront Evelyn, and Evelyn's now like powerful. And Adam quotes the original show. He says, "I'm Adam, Prince of Eternia and defender of the secret of Castle Grayskull." And then he said, and then Cringer comes out of nowhere and attacks Evelyn. And he goes, "And this is Cringer, my fearless friend." I was like, that is so fucking cool. It was the biggest nerd out moment of like, because you could see the love of the original stuff. And you know, anytime they would quote the old stuff, you know, like I said, with Blade, I was like, oh my God, it's Blade. Anytime, even like at some point, the old man at arms, Duncan, is in, he's in Castle Grayskull in a dungeon. And next to him is this monster coming out of a grate that is based on a decal in the toy of Castle Grayskull.
Yeah.
Like, this is how deep they go with the references.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because, like, when you watch that panel that you shared with me, you can see that there's a big He-Man fan base and that they really love He-Man. I was going to ask you. You know, there's obviously like the main franchises from when we're kids. There's Masters of the Universe. There's Ninja Turtles, there's Transformers, and G.I. Joe, right? I think that's maybe Thundercats.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that for you, Ghostbusters is your favorite. But then is it Masters of the Universe underneath that?
Well, Ghostbusters is the only fandom that's tattooed on my body. I have the Ghostbusters symbol.
Yes.
I would say, actually, I would probably say TMNT would be second.
Oh.
And then maybe Masters. Although I have been thinking about getting the Sword of Power tattooed. Like, just like the original, like that very cool original Sword of Power look.
Yeah. That's interesting. Okay. That's not what I thought. I thought you were going to say that it was like Ghostbusters and then Masters of the Universe. I didn't know Turtles were going to beat it. But like when you're growing up, like, I always felt like Turtles was probably like my favorite thing as a kid, mm-hmm. but I still have this fondness for Transformers, and I like Transformers the most now. But I always remember watching the He-Man cartoon as a kid, and I always remember the toys.
Yeah,
probably out of the toys, I had the Turtles toys the most, then He-Man the second most.
Yeah.
And that's where you just get a love for all these random fucking characters, like that elephant thing that's got that like Tusk, you know that?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that guy's name is, but it just like pops into my head.
He squirted water.
What's that?
The toy squirted water.
Right. And then there's like, Fakor, Manny Faces, all these weird ass characters, you know. But obviously, the people involved with this show really love all of that and just eat it all up. Yeah. So
I know you've got to run, but was one thing I want to bring up as our sort of last point, because it sort of leads us into the other show that we're going to talk about next week.
Yeah.
This show, at the end, it introduces the "we have the power" idea, which is, I think, maybe reflects our sort of modern, woke, liberal sensibilities. He-Man gets the sword back and becomes He-Man, but then he powers up Skeletor and lets Skeletor become Skele-God. And Skeletor's like, "Why did you do that?" And he's like, "I want you to know what it feels like to use the power for good." And that idea of "we have the power," that sort of egalitarian "we have the power," that becomes, I think, the real basis of this other show.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the best parts about He-Man is that he transforms, right? That is like Shazam too. He calls upon the power and he transforms. And it happened in every single episode. You'd see him, "I have the power," and he's sitting in front of Castle Grayskull. In that Netflix CGI cartoon, that happens, but it happens for like every single character. It happens for Mary Arms, right? Teela is sorceress, so she becomes sorceress, right? Yeah, it obviously changed it from this white male hero becoming, you know, the super male. Now it's like everyone else is getting empowered. And I think that that's the only way you can really go with He-Man moving forward. You know, even his name, I could kind of see that, like, they just use Masters of the Universe a lot more versus He-Man. I mean, his name's always been silly, but it's like, you know, with pronouns and stuff, that's how you move forward, is make it that, like, the power goes to multiple characters.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we talked about this once before in the show. We had an idea of making a Masters film that was from Skeletor's point of view. And basically, Skeletor was like this. Everything you heard about him was wrong. He's this egalitarian, very like Marxist guy. And he says the people have the power. Then He-Man's like, "No, I have the power." And He-Man's the villain. I got to write that.
That's fucking awesome. 1%er He-Man. I love that. That's awesome. Yeah. A little side note is, like, from that panel that we watched, this one dude wrote a novel from the perspective of Skeletor too.
I want to read that.
Yeah.
That looks like a lot of fun. What did you, I guess this would be the last thing. What did you think of the Skeletor in this show? Cause I'm a little torn about by it. I feel like it should have been scary or funny, and it tries to be both, and I don't know if it ever decides on what it wants to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what it all comes down to is you have the Skeletor from the cartoon and you have the Frank Langella Skeletor, and the Frank Langella Skeletor is not funny at all. He's very scary. He's super dramatic and intense, right? It's like fucking the Al Pacino of skull-faced villains, right? and I think that all incarnations of Skeletor after that try to meld those two together.
Yeah, it's, I like, agree.
Because besides just the actor being imposing in the movie and stuff, he also has those like stormtroopers that are all like black.
Yeah.
And all of his henchmen in the movie are real scary monsters.
Yeah.
So the villains are very intimidating in the film. And obviously that made an impact on us as children. And I think that they try to like take that goofy Skeletor who's like running away, like, "Away I go! That's Skeletor!"
Yeah,
with that. And it's a balancing act because he's goofy and he's supposed to be scary too. I think that maybe casting Mark Hamill is really profound because he was the Joker, and the Joker can often be like just a buffoon, but then he's also like very scary. So I like this version of Skeletor.
Yeah, okay. You know, it's funny. You made me just think of this. Skeletor's plan in this is very similar to his plan in the movie. He's waiting for like this eclipse to happen for the stars to be in the right moment where he could get all of the power. And that's exactly what he's doing in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's absolutely references to the movie. Like, you've already mentioned a whole bunch of them. But, like, it's clear, like, when it comes down to these franchises, there was a movie when we were kids, and the movie, like, really affected us. Yeah. Like, Transformers, the movie really affected me. The Ninja Turtles movie really affected me.
Yeah.
And then the Masters of the Universe movie really got me.
Well, there's a couple scenes in this where He-Man is on this, like, flying board, which that's exactly from the movie. That's totally from the movie.
Exactly, exactly, yeah.
Peter, thank you so much for being here and talking about the power with me.
Yes. I love talking to you, man. You love the same stuff, and we have kind of the same sensibilities, and I think your show is a lot of fun. I'm really honored to be on.
Thank you so much, and we're so happy to have you. Tell us where we can find all your stuff for the listeners.
Sure, sure. I basically, at this point, I really just have like two YouTube channels. I used to have three, but I have one called The Lassercast, which is like a horror YouTube channel, and it's also a podcast. Me and my friend Danny, we cover all different types of horror movies and TV shows, and I also interview a lot of horror authors. So like that's one of my channels, and the other one is Comic Books Transformed, where Brian and I talk about a lot of stuff similar to what you do on PCMC. That is also a YouTube channel and a podcast, and we cover a lot of the adaptations of you know, comic books into streaming shows and movies. So
you do a lot of great TV reviews. Like, you kind of keep up with it. I watched everything you everything you did for Peacemaker. So yeah, that's really fun. If you like PCMC, you'd love this channel.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Peter, thank you so much for being here. We end every episode by saying,
yes, like animal. I'm going to just say it awkwardly again, but I'll say, go bye-bye.